Well, you can't say we didn't warn you. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Amazingly, for once, the form book was right. Welcome to episode 501 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. We're here to basically be your support group for the evening, because
we're here to tell you that we told you so.
Yeah, in as polite and as subtle a way as we can, we're going to tell you that we told you so. I'm Dre Harrison. Joining me is Cam Buckley. It's just the two of us on this occasion. It's a cozy fit. We've kept to separate rooms this time because Cam didn't like the snuggling idea from our 499 episode on IndyCar.
No, I'm thinking RJ isn't present on account of the fact that I'm still getting away with it.
Oh yeah.
Somehow Red Bull only delivered the second biggest beating of the weekend.
So, for those who aren't the biggest sports car fans in the world, yes, Cam is still unbelievably smug for like the fourth fucking time this year already that Porsche had a clean sweep of the Qatar 18-12 kilometer to start the WEC season for the year. A podium clean sweep, fresh. You have the blood of Peugeot on your hands, Buckley.
Absolutely. No, Peugeot has their own. How do you fuck up the final splash? How?
For those who missed it, Peugeot's final stop with about 12 laps to go in the race in Qatar, they incorrectly fueled their car, and the Peugeot that was running second, it was going to be a fantastic
race of the wingless wonder.
Yeah, before they update the car with a wing, it was running a legit second and was likely going to finish second, which would have been a fantastic result for Peugeot. They underfueled their car by a lap. They end up just barely crossing the start finish line to finish race, but Vern knew what he was doing in the car because that's John Eric Vern, by the way, and they knew what they were doing. They were going to get disqualified because Vern wanted the honor of falling on his sword by using the ERS under 100 miles an hour to limp the Peugeot over the line with basically a lap and a half to go because he knew they were going to run out of fuel.
Big, I'd like finish. To finish Nico Rosberg energy. Mm-hmm. Personally, oof.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I had to get back in the saddle again and fire up the cursed sports car account.
Yeah.
But that's
a Toyota 2016 moment right there. My God.
God damn it. You know, you win some, you lose some. I personally am suffering from success.
Shout out to Porsche. Congratulations to them. Shout out to the Jota team as well for finishing second over the line as well. Well done, Callum Ilott. What a stint he put together towards the end of that race, by the way.
Murdered tires on the end. There was nothing left in the tank for him. The car, you know, visibly lurching around on shot fronts and brought it home second.
Yeah, that boy Nice. I'm staring into my monitor right now in full Ricardo Juncos. It's almost like Callum Ilott's really good at this shit or something. Who'd have thought it? You know, a guy that probably should have been in F1, but here we are. Congrats to Porsche. Congrats to an unbelievably smug Cameron Buckley for this. Hey, seemed like
regarding P2, regarding Catamount, and never count out touchdown Tom.
Spoken like a true New England Patriots fan. What a bastard.
Takes one to know one.
Yeah, I know. I can't relate at all to this one. Yeah, we got to talk about the Bahrain Grand Prix and everything that came around as a result of it. We kind of warned you all as listeners that what we were getting ourselves into, and it's the hope that gets you. It really does sometimes.
What hope? If you had hope, you were wrong.
You know what the F1 audience is like, Cam. They will look for any
delusional
shred.
Delusional. Yeah. It's feeding into their own lies.
Yeah, it is one of those things where you just... we as F1 fans, we love watching F1. Like, this is like people, when people always say to me, like, well, Dre, why do you keep watching if it's going to be so predictable? Because, like, because we love racing, we love cars, we love motorsport, and we want the most popular series to do well. It's good for everybody if F1 does well. People don't want to admit that fact. And we grew up loving this shit, so it's hard to walk away from it. But we're not going to beat around the bush, piss on your heads, and tell you it's going to rain. When this goes down, and this is no exception. The form book absolutely held up true, maybe except for one manufacturer, which we'll get to later on in the show. But
will we get to them?
The form book we fought from testing was pretty much on the nose, is what we would say. Certainly in the top five is what I would say. A little bit sketchier below that. We'll get into that later. But we'll be talking about the race itself as Max Verstappen wins his 8th Grand Prix in a row. It's the quietest 8 race winning streak you will ever hear about in Formula One now.
Three people have won more than 8 races in a row. And Max Verstappen is 2 of them.
Yeah, it is. He's the first person in history to have 2 8 race winning streaks in their careers. Absolutely bonkers. More on that as we get to it and how the field is shaken out. We're going to talk a little bit about Alpine because it's literally Tom Hanks staring out of Apollo 13's window going, Houston, we have a problem. It turns out Alpine's was bigger than we thought. It is a rough time in Enstone right now, let me tell you. And we'll also talk about some of the V-carb drama as well, because Yuki Tsunoda and Daniel Ricciardo have had a civil war after, well, one race in the new season, and we'll get into the mess that was at the end of the race. And yeah, there'll also be yet more follow-up shit on Christian Horner and the current Red Bull investigation towards the end of the show as well. It's a busy one, but we are going to thrash out as best we can over the next hour or so. So, places you can find us real quick. We are on motorsport101.com, our website. Stay tuned for next week. There'll also be a bonus season preview as well coming to you from Super Formula. RJ O'Connell very generously has donated his time and effort to craft one of those for you, as well as our IndyCar season preview, which is already out in audio form, but my written notes are on the website by the time this goes out as well. 17,000 words in total to put all the 3 of those together from yours truly on that one. It was fun. I enjoyed it. You can find us also as well on Elon Musk's failed business investment at DreHarrison101 and at CBuckley917. You can find RJ O'Connell at literally RJ O'Connell and the pod itself at Motorsport_101. We're on Motorsport101 pod on Instagram as well. And if you're really lucky, so you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier as well to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, is what Jason is doing right now. Thanks, Jason, for listening in as ever. We also did get a new backer at the $5 level. I'm just going to find their name on my email address right now to make sure I get this right. Erling Lorge. Erling, thanks for listening, man. Thanks for subscribing. Hope you're not brothers with Erling Haaland. Just throwing that out there, because he was too busy tenderizing Man United's meat this afternoon. It was quite a Manchester Derby beating. That was literally about 3 hours ago as I'm recording this, so that's a sport of us when we're actually doing this shit, but here we are. Thanks for backing us, Erling. Much appreciated, my friend. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And without further ado, let's get into the 2024 Bahrain Grand Prix.
Some would say it's the hope that gets you. Not that I had any. Max Verstappen extinguished all hope early in this race to slam down a 4th career Grand Slam victory in Bahrain, dominating by over 22 seconds from teammate Sergio Perez for a Red Bull 1-2, and 25 seconds ahead of 3rd place Carlos Sainz, lead runner for Ferrari, who beat his teammate Charles Leclerc, struggling with a brake problem. The front brakes were misbalanced right to left by over 100 degrees at times.
Wild shit.
Ungood.
Ungood.
But if you thought that was bad for your second place team, it was worse for your third and fourth place teams, as McLaren and Mercedes both had niggles of their own via electronics and power unit problem overheating, respectively, and Aston Martin taking over the mantle as the no man's land runners, rounding out the points. Dre, what were your big takeaways now that we've seen these cars run in anger?
I'm quite proud of myself because when I wrote my F1 season preview, I put a tier list at the bottom of the piece describing how I thought the pecking order was going to play out. And I was almost spot on in how this actually played out in the end. Like, I was probably a bit too generous to Alpine, but maybe they'll figure their shit out down the road and it'll end up balancing out roughly. But, I mean, the top five teams were exactly as the form book suggested. It was a clear, there's now a clear haves and the have-nots when it comes to F1, and we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty behind that in the Alpine section later, but the form book was true. It absolutely held up. The status quo has pretty much remained the same. Red Bull beat that ass. Again, they leave the door half open in qualifying. If Charles Leclerc can nail a lap, maybe he can beat Max to pole. I'm almost getting bored of the Verstappen-Leclerc front rows at this point because they are the two best qualifiers in F1 at this point. But yeah, Leclerc tried, got on the front row, couldn't beat Max. Max nailed his start of the turn one and the race was already over. Jason Quarrelli points out in the chat, one of the rules that went under the radar going into this season, they have changed the DRS rule now where it kicks in on lap two rather than lap three. That's a new rule that DRS will now be active only one lap after a restart as opposed to two.
Well, Dre.
And it didn't matter.
Yeah. How did Max respond to that? Oh, he punched out a second gap on lap one.
Yeah, he was 1.3 seconds up by lap two and the game was over. It was like Max has inherited Sebastian Vettel's lightning rod ability. If he was playing an RPG, it'd be like, yeah, make sure you're guaranteed a 2 second gap by the end of the second lap. And like the peak of that Red Bull under heavy fuel, it was going 0.8 a lap quicker than everybody else. It was like a 4 second gap in five laps. And yeah. Game was over at that point. Well, it was fun seeing the Ferraris, George Russell, Sergio Perez run relatively close and beat each other up a little bit. That was fun in the first third of this race. But once they got onto the hard rubber, it was the same old story. Max is on a completely different stratosphere to everybody else right now. He's got half a second on everyone, including his teammate. It's remarkable what he's doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, the beatings have continued and morale has collapsed is the summary of this race. I mean, it's just like last year. You get close in qualifying, they leave the door half open, and that gives way to a complete shelling of the field in race trim. The averages would tell you that Max had about a half a second on the field. In reality, he probably had a hell of a lot more, but he didn't need to use it. He went for one fastest lap attempt, and he punched in a 1 minute 32.6 while no one else could even delve under a 34.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah, because he and Checo were the only guys who were able to run soft, hard, soft for a two-stop race strategy. Everybody else had to go soft, hard, hard.
Yeah, and Perez's hards running second, or his soft tires, held up just about as well as the hards of the cars directly behind him.
There's a great radio message with Sergio, with Carlos Sainz, who had a great race running third. To be fair to Carlos, he did the best he could have possibly done in that car.
He drove like a man who knows that he is auditioning for his career.
Yeah, that man is chopped liver, and he knows he's chopped liver, and he drove like he was chopped liver. He basically sent it right up the inside of Charles Leclerc a couple of times. He drove hard, and I kind of respect him for that on that occasion. But there was a great radio message from Carlos Sainz, lead strategist at Ferrari, when he came out and said, "Of about 10 to go. So when is the hard tire going to start to come to me?" And afterwards, his race engineer said,
"I'll get back to you."
Yeah, I'll get back to you. Eventually, he came back and said, it should be right around now, and that now never happened.
Yeah. How well does that sum up Ferrari? So when is our strategy going to start to come into play? Oh, we'll get back to you.
It just never happened. Bless him. Like, it's the testament to Red Bull and what this RB20 can do. It can do shit that no other car can do. It can run soft, hard, soft. Be more aggressive on its tires, and it just doesn't matter. It's just got inherent built-in base.
It's too effective as a race day weapon. It's if you looked at it in MotoGP terms, it's a Sunday car.
Stunning driver. Yes, yes.
And yeah, it's just devastating race pace. Max could gap the field pretty much at will whenever he wanted, and I think came over the radio and asked, said, let me know if anyone gets close. No one ever did.
No. And I think he's actually listening to Gianpiero Lambiassi's race race engineer GP as well, saying, look, let's not go over the top here. And he didn't. If anything, Perez at the first half of that final stint was actually a little bit quicker. And then Max just started to turn it up a little bit. And next thing you know, it was a 20-second gap instead of a 15-second gap. He's got pace at will. It really is. He can just dig into an extra half second whenever he needs it. It's terrifying. What he's doing is shit we have never seen before in F1. Like, it's,
I mean,
it's like
Dre, his run from lap 19 to 27, his first sector, he never deviated from a 30.5 in the first sector.
Again,
every lap after lap, just it's just metronomic. He picks a pace that works and just runs there, and it's fucking robotic.
Yeah, it's Jorge Lorenzo in his prime, where, you know, those days in MotoGP when Lorenzo had a good track that he liked and he had open air in front of him. And if those days when Lorenzo was doing that, he was impossible to beat. It was metronomic.
You just carved the smoothest, most precise lines that you could, and it just generates so much lap time. And that's just it. The mix of how Max can set up the car, how he can live with it, coupled to this. I mean, if anyone thought that a change in general concept was going to trip Red Bull up, it hasn't.
No.
And they have emphatically put that to bed in this first race. And this is despite Ferrari taking a clear step forward in race trim. They had a messy race. Both cars suffered brake problems. Charles were much more severe. And they were about 10 seconds closer to Red Bull than they were last year. But that's still a mountain to climb.
Yeah, they still have such a long,
so big on race day.
Yeah, they've got such a long. It just emphasized just how much of a long way they still have to go. They still have half a second to find, realistically. And how many times
more on race day?
Yeah, how much has Red Bull even been stretched in the last year and change? Like, how many times can you say Red Bull was truly at 100% of what they could do? Maybe Singapore, maybe the back end of Austin last year.
Yeah, and Austin was against an illegal car.
Right.
Two legal cars, actually. Yeah. And Las Vegas, where their tire wear wasn't as good on the softer compounds, but Ferrari's Achilles heel last year was the harder tire. As soon as Red Bull put on the hard, they just started driving away.
Yeah.
Max was able to cut through and said steal the win that Ferrari really had the pace to get. And I mean, it really emphasizes just the state of the play at the front of the field when the Mercs are overheating and have power unit problems. The McLarens have electronic issues. The Ferraris are overheating their brakes side to side, and Perez couldn't hear his engineer.
Levels to these problems. Levels. Literally, in the case of Perez's radio, audio levels. But yeah, what more can you say that hasn't already been said about it? It is absolutely destructive of the field, and everybody else around them is having niggles. They're trying to find their maximum, having little issues here and there. Red Bull have come in to the first race weekend of the year, professional job, and just beat the field over their knees again like nothing happened last year. It's just business as usual. Crack on.
Yeah, if anything, there's certain things where, I mean, Max didn't put together a particularly great lap on Saturday. It was still enough for pole.
Yeah.
And so whatever this car might not have in qualifying trim, it has in spades on race day.
Same formula as last year.
Exactly. And with a major car upgrade planned for Honda's home event in Japan, which of course is round four this year, rather than back end of the season. Abandon your posts, abandon your homes, abandon all hope.
Yeah, like there's some things that leapt off the page to me going into this round that was like, oh, this isn't good. And we'll, obviously, we've talked about Christian Horner at length on this podcast. We're going to do a little bit so again at the end of the show.
It's this just is the gift that doesn't stop shitting all over everything we have to talk about.
Yeah, it's this is the worst case scenario for F1. It's the biggest season it's ever going to have. It's a 24-round calendar. That's already exhausted enough as it is. On top of that, you've now had the state of the field largely not change. Like, you know, it's as a whole, it's a close field, but no, unfortunately, the biggest gap is the one at the front, and that is a big problem. You've had, you've gotten the competitive balance of the field is still roughly the same as it was last year. They're reliable, so you can't even really rely on technical fuck-ups, because this was the first F1 opening season race ever where all 20 cars made the flag. So you can't even bank on a reliability failure like you normally would, because it's been, this is year 11
of these
regulations.
They had a perfect record last year. The only major mechanical they had last year was Verstappen's half shaft in Saudi Arabia qualifying.
Right.
Well, it didn't matter. He came back through in the race, bulldozed the field, and came back to second.
Yeah, it was still a perfect weekend for Red Bull. Just the Mexican was in front of the Dutchman. It's as simple as that. They still scored the maximum amount of points available on the weekend, so who gives a shit?
That was their worst weekend for reliability. They scored maximum points.
Exactly. So, and look, even I noticed from F1 broadcasting, David does a great job over there, like DTS's ratings for season six, like for like, were down 20% on last year. Like, this is worst case scenario for F1 right now, that you are likely not going to have, you're going to be asking a lot of your hardcore new fans that have come in to put up with this. That's just the reality of motorsport sometimes. Like, Red Bull is on a different stratosphere compared to the rest of the field.
It's practically a clone of what happened 20 years ago in Bahrain, where we're looking at the first stint and Michael Schumacher is just shredding time out of the field.
Yeah.
He was up, what, at the same point in the race that Max was up by 10 seconds. I think Schumacher was up by 11 on Rubens.
Yeah.
20 years ago. And you realize, oh, this is going to be a long season.
Oh, yeah.
And just again, I mean, it's going to be a long season. And the shame in all of it is that the ATR restrictions and the cost cap are working. They are compressing the field.
Absolutely.
But a cost cap and limiting aero regulations or aero testing time, they will only hold your hand so much. You ultimately still have to do the job. And one of the things that it's probably going to close up a little bit more, because Ferrari have made a big change to their car. It's probably 90% new. The Mercedes is 100% new. It's going to take them time to get on top of things. But at that same time, Red Bull, just like at the start of these regulations in 22, when they nailed the concept from the start, rather than solving problems and chasing things, they can just focus on adding performance.
Yeah.
And that exacerbates that gap.
It's the same conveyor belt that keeps moving compared to last year. Like, I remember the vibe coming out of testing and the half leaked half stories that came out of the paddock during testing, and everybody had the same general thought that Red Bull was between 0.5 and a second in front, and it was a morale shatterer. Everyone was like, shit. I remember Andrea Stella, who was one of the better team principals in Formula One at McLaren, universally respected amongst the paddock. He's done very good work at McLaren for the most part, and he said he took one look at the RB20 and was like, wow.
and just like Red Bull, you know, through Ferrari and Mercedes utterly failing last year to capitalize on whatever good their concepts had, because their concepts were poor, Red Bull got to take more or less the year off. They got bailed out of having to develop the RB19. They've been able to pour the resources into the 20, and here we are again. The gap is the same, if not bigger.
Yeah,
it was at the end of last year.
In the best and the worst possible sense, Red Bull, business as usual. More on that later. Now, there's, like I said, there was one team we've alluded to that was probably the big outlier compared to where the form book suggested they were at, and that was Alpine. They were the standout disaster from the weekend. A team that looked milquetoast in testing had to dial it up on Friday and ended up dead last in qualifying and then finishing the race in 17th and 18th place, a lap down. The only two people that finished worse than the Alpines were Valtteri Bottas, who had a 52-second final pit stop. Probably not the core memory for the Finn.
Man. Machine, not two, electric boogaloo.
Yeah, and Logan Sargeant, who had his steering wheel fail at the end of his first stint. Poor man. He was actually driving really well. He was in 14th and doing good work.
Might be the best I think he's ever looked in Formula One. All for naught.
Yeah, steering wheel failed, and that was the effective end of his day, unfortunately. But turns out, mere hours before the Grand Prix had started, it was broken by Racing News 365, later confirmed by the race and others, that... turns out the Alpine internal drama was bigger than we thought, because it had turned out that Matt Harmon, who's their technical director at the team, and Dirk De Beer, their head of aerodynamics, had both already resigned in the off-season and were only there now to serve out their notice periods. Turns out there's going to be yet more staff reshuffling their positions as the season goes on at Alpine, which, what the heck is going on there, Cam?
I mean, I tried to tell a few people, and they didn't want to hear it. I mean, this is a team that usually runs heavy. They focus on the race side of things in preseason, but the car is horrible. Car is fucking horrible. I mean, it's come out through the grapevine, and the team has tried to play this down, but God, it looks it. They're supposedly about 10 to 11 kilos over the minimum weight, which means they're a hell of a lot heavier than the teams around them.
How are we still talking about cars being overweight in year three of these regulations?
Because they failed their crash test.
Yeah, that'll do it.
So you have to overbuild the tub. And that just cascades. It hurts your aero if you have to make certain parts of the tub thicker. It hurts your weight, obviously. You have weight in bad places. It hurts everything. Yeah. Weight hurts you everywhere. If the weight is high up, if it needs to be, it hurts you even more. Their power unit is still a dog. I mean, if anything, the deficit of 30 to 40 horsepower from last year, if anything's probably only grown.
Yeah,
given we know that Honda, Mercedes, and Ferrari do what they can under this engine freeze to, if not increase performance, at least make the engine more reliable at higher modes to get more out of it for more periods of time.
Yeah, more aggression.
It wouldn't surprise me if they're closer to 50 off this year. I mean, what is good about their car right now? It is the pits. And it looked it. I mean, in qualifying, you know what's amazing? I mentioned that the cost cap and the ATR is working. Last year, where the times were for Alpine, it would have got you sixth on the grid. This year, dead last.
1 second covered the entire field in Q1, the most competitive ultimate running of these cars. Yes, the top teams do phone it in a bit, of course. But despite that, Alpine were a second off the top and they were dead last.
But Dre, that ballooned out in the race. They were on average 2 seconds a lap off the pace of Red Bull. About a tenth off of Williams, who had a horrible race. They destroyed their tires over at Williams. A shockingly bad event given the trajectory they've been on. Source car on the grid. And they're a factory team.
And what gets me is what sort of conversations were happening behind the scenes in this team, because Bruno Fermin was made a permanent team principal now. He was interim when obviously Benoît Safnauer was let go in the middle of last season. Bruno Fermin came in as interim. He's now permanent team principal. He's, I think, the third or fourth team principal this team has had in half a decade now. I still remember Marcin Budkowski running this team. He's more of a pub quiz answer.
Budkowski,
Cyril Otmar. Marcin Otmar. Yeah, you know, it goes on.
And now Fermin has a track record of being very successful. If you remember, he used to be involved with Peugeot's previous Le Mans project. Yeah. Which
he knows what he's doing.
Sometimes it blew itself up at Le Mans, but that car was
fast.
Ooh, fast as fuck.
Oh yeah, like, this is not necessarily a condemnation of the staff as people. These are people that generally know what they're doing.
It's the overall
structure.
I mean, Prost came, is now gone.
Yeah,
and now they've burnt through another technical director. Their head of Arrow gone again. I mean, they've gone through. We joke about Ferrari's, you know, internal upheavals. Mm. Alpine is doing like a Ferrari speed run of just the amount of staff that they're just torching through and going through.
Right.
I've heard that, to the effect that Alpine and Renault don't care. I think that's the wrong way to look at it, because if that was the case, they wouldn't be burning through the staff. They would just sit there. It's so bad. And the internal turmoil of this team and Alpine and Renault greater, they're just spinning their wheels. They were projecting last year, right, Dre?
Mm.
Remember, they came out of and last year's chassis, for what it was worth, very good. Got a podium on merit. When it wasn't power sensitive, that car was good enough to nip at the heels of the front runners.
Yeah, top six quality, easy.
Mm. But that's just it. They were aiming to be fourth, but closer to third. Well, they ended up sixth.
So disaster.
This is a fucking disaster.
Yeah. The moment McLaren found their upgrade, Alpine was overtaken and passed in two race weekends.
They got blown off by Aston before that.
Yeah. And it was a complete disaster of a season. And look, from what I've been told, Matt Harmon is a very, very good technical director. He's a very good...
Someone's going to pick him up. He's quality.
Absolutely. He's a quality technical director. Dirk De Beer knows what he's doing with aerodynamics. These are not... I need to stress this again. These are not bad personnel that are losing their jobs. Alan Parmain getting let go last year. A guy that had been with that team since the days it was named Tolman. In the 80s.
A staple of the paddock. Someone who had been an integral part of Team Enstone through the highs, through the championships.
37 years with that team.
Through the championships capacity. And through the death of the team going out of 2015 and the repurchase under Renault.
Yeah. These are good people. They know what they're doing. Like, in a vacuum, these are good staff that would help any good F1 team get on its feet. And they're all leaving. Like, what happened behind the scenes for Harmon and De Beer to go, fuck this, I'd rather not be here anymore? That is alarming to me. That says to me this is a project in disarray. And Bruno Famin kept mentioning that word all through the back end of last year. This is a project. This is the project. We think this project is going somewhere. They sold a quarter of it to that massive consortium, including Travis Kelce, Pat Mahomes, Anthony Joshua, Rob McElhenney, and Ryan Reynolds, and all those fucking celebrities. They sold a quarter of that team off to raise 200 million euros that was going to go directly back into their facilities. This is a team that has talked the big one for a long time. But they're also, as we also know, they're the first ones to quit when shit gets hard.
Well, second. I mean, Honda still are kind of involved. You're not wrong, though. Like, Renault, when the going gets tough, they usually get going. They've done it a few times. And yet, through all of this right now, they have remained involved. And again, they redesigned their whole power unit in 22 going into the freeze to try and, you know, cure what has been the big fundamental weakness of Renault and Renault adjacent, is that they wanted these power unit regulations. They threatened to leave if they didn't get them. And then they were blown into the weeds so bad that they have seen no success under these regulations. They have not at one time throughout this entire regulation set had the best power unit. Maybe one race in Mexico in high altitude, what, in 2018?
They've had one win since coming back and a handful of podiums.
They've had one win since Red Bull bailed on them. Red Bull are currently turning the field into paste with the Japanese power unit in the back. They don't call it the Honda Motor Company for nothing.
Yes.
And yet, it just feels like Renault and Enstone and their staff are not talking to one another. They're not. It's not amicable, and it's tearing itself apart.
What was the Otmar quote again?
Something about 9 women and a baby.
Yeah, normally that process doesn't take a month, which still an all-time classic quote for what it's worth, but it also summed up the situation at Alpine very well. I wrote about it last year. They have too many cooks in their kitchen. They have too many people to answer for, and then they start reshuffling staff and resources around the moment things go slightly out of whack. You blew this team up for the third time over being sixth at mid-season. You're now running dead last. And let's not forget, the way the structure of the field is right now, with Aston Martin being a clear number five team in the field right now.
Distant number five. Distant they are, five. They've replaced Alpine as the no man's land.
Remember, Lance Stroll had a genuinely good race on Saturday. He was spun out lap one, turn one by Nico Hülkenberg. He came back and finished in 10th. That was a good day at the office for Lance. And all credit to the man, right? It was a good day from him. That says to me Aston Martin are the clear number five team in the field right now. And we all know points only go to top 10.
So points are at an all-time premium.
Yeah.
Because, like, it provided that the top five teams just don't dick around, which is quite hard for a couple of them, you're not going to score points. If you are a lower team, you have no option to score points right now.
Yeah.
You're going to need to rely on chaos.
And that's never a good sign. You can't bank on miracles, as Jason Crowley puts in that chat. You can't bank on miracles in this sport. You might get one or two of those a year, if you're lucky.
Not everything can be the drag strip of poor judgment.
Exactly. And Alpine, not in a good way at all.
If there is good news in the struggle for them, which there ain't a lot of, if they can rehomologate a chassis that meets a correctly built chassis that meets the minimum weight, they're going to exponentially improve. That's going to help them everywhere. But we just don't know when that's going to be.
These things take time. They're not normally an overnight fix. And figuring out where to lose 11 kilos from a chassis is not an easy thing to figure out from my common sense brain. Good luck to them. They're going to need it quite likely. Now, we were kind of like lacking drama in the second half of this race. That's when things really settled down. But it did pick up again towards the end. The last five laps were very interesting in a surprise fight for P11 on the grid. Well, Zhou Guanyu, have a day, sir, by the way. P11 in that kick salve, a great drive from him. Needed that with Zane Maloney doubling up in F2 over the weekend. And he's now part of the same academy he drives for, which I thought was quite interesting. Good day for Joe, though, for him in 11th. But for 12th, there was a fight between, yes, the Haas of Kevin Magnussen. Turns out Haas maybe aren't as cheeks as we thought they were. God damn.
Nico Hülkenberg might be the single greatest driver who ever lived over one lap because he threw it all away on turn one.
Hülkenberg qualified 9th, had a made Q3. Brilliantly again, like the ninth time he's made since the start of last season.
Doing this,
I don't know how he does it, but his qualifying pace is sensational. But then bogged down at the start of the race, and then hit Lance Stroll going into turn one. Deemed a race
front wing,
but it broke his front wing. It ruined his second year in a row. Hülkenberg's been caught up in an incident. Turn one, lap one, ended up finishing 16th on the free stopper in the end. Magnussen had a good day. P12, and held off arguably faster machinery behind him because the V-carbs, the RBs, the Visa Cash App Rebels, everyone to fucking call them.
Team Faenza,
as RJ would politely call them, had to deal with a strategy flare-up because with about 8 laps to go in the end of the race, Tsunoda was trying to figure out a way to get around Kevin Magnussen in a fight for 12th. Daniel Ricciardo, who was put on a soft tire at the end of the race and reeled them in, was in the queue behind them. Eventually, with about 5 to go, they tell Luke Yuki on the radio, driver swap. Yuki, who's didn't like frustrated about... Yeah, he didn't like it, but he relented. He stepped aside and let Daniel go after K-Mag.
Took him 2 laps, though, after he got the call.
Took him 2 laps after he got the call. He eventually moves aside and lets Ricciardo through. Ricciardo has a go at Magnussen, goes all the way to the final corner, can't do it in the end. Magnussen holds on to P12, Ricciardo 13th, Tsunoda 14th. And then after the race on the cooldown lap, Tsunoda loses his head and dive bombs his own teammate into turn eight. In frustration at the call, Ricciardo, you could hear him in his he's in the middle of his debrief as Tsunoda charges down the inside of him at the hairpin, and Ricciardo says, "You fucking helmet," which is very Australian for what it's worth, but I can't disagree with him.
Australia mentioned. Did he say that while he was eating some Vegemite?
Might as well have been, quite frankly. But after the race, Ricciardo described Tsunoda's actions as, quote, immature, which, well, hard to argue with that. What did you make of all that at the end, Cam?
You can take the Mechies out of the Haunts, but you can't take the Haunts out of the Mechies, it appears, because the strategy was pretty piss poor from V-Carb. Visa RB. Let's just call it Visa RB. What the fuck ever. And I mean, the points were going to be a stretch for them anyway. But I can't fathom splitting your strategy in a way that then favors your car that is behind. And they had talked about this before the race. And I'm like, even if you talked about it before the race, that's still not the smartest way to go about things. You'd think that you would, given that they could run the hards long enough to make the softs work at the end, you'd think you'd favor your driver in front and try and go launch for some points. They didn't do that.
No.
And so it was just really unnecessary for me to put both of your drivers at odds like that. However, and I am number one member of the Yuki Tsunoda fan club, Mans needs to chill. That's really, it's over 12th place, brother. This is not who you want to be. You're in year four. You took so many steps last year. You were so fucking good last year.
Genuinely, yeah.
Driver of the year candidate for much of last year. And on merit for most of this was beating Daniel.
Yeah, he was comfortably better than Daniel this weekend.
And again, not smart to compromise your leading driver on strategy. But you're losing your head over 12th. There's no need.
Yeah, I mean, for me,
it's just fucking unnecessary.
Yeah, that just sums it up. The whole thing was unnecessary. V-Carb over-egged the pudding on the strategy in the first place. It's not a good sign to me when Daniel Ricciardo told Will Buxton on F1 TV after the race that the plan was they were going to meet somewhere in the middle on track. Why? Why would that even be a thing in the first place? That's bad enough as it is. It was a poor strategy call. And look, I understand to an extent Yuki's frustration because it was a bad strategy and it was bad call.
I think a big component of it is that we talked about points being at a premium, right?
Mm-hmm.
If Daniel can go and get points, you know, V-Carb are good, but they're not that good. They're right boiling under the surface of points because the top five are just way out there. If Daniel scores that point, unironically, that could be like the death sentence of the driver-to-driver comparison for Yuki for the year. So to an extent, I get it. But it's just immature.
It's not worth it. I mean, you are burning your bridge. It's not worth picking that fight. Yeah, you're burning. This is a brand new team principle. Like Lauren Mekis is a good sporting director to run this team. This is the first race of a new era for the team, and you've already got your drivers at loggerheads for no good reason. Look, I can only echo Cam's sentiment. I'm a big fan of Yuki Tsunoda. I had him down for a guy that could have a breakout season this year. I really do think Yuki
He looked like it in qualifying. And yeah, he beat Ricciardo by about just under a quarter of a second. Most people don't do that.
No, and
mostly
he's
Lando
a
Norris.
Very solid pair of hands. I think he's been underrated for a lot of his time in Formula One. You cannot do this. This is straight up dangerous. He lost control of his car. He locked up under that dive bomb attempt into turn eight. He lost control of his car and dive bombed into the side of Daniel Ricciardo. Luckily, there was no contact. But if those cars hit each other right there and then, what the hell is he going to say after the race?
Days of thunder. He's just destroyed both my cars. You're right. Fired. You're fired. You're all fired. That's and honestly, wouldn't be entirely unjustified.
No. Tsunoda has to. Look, I am done with the cuteness that's been made with Yuki Tsunoda's anger. This is year four of your career in Formula One. You're the first man to ever do a fourth season in this team, which is all you're already your place in F1, whether you like it or not, is hanging by a thread, depending on how this year plays out. You cannot afford to
realistically
to give up an open goal like this.
Right. These next 2 years are realistically what they are is an audition for Yuki. With Honda pairing up with Aston, with Team Silverstone, whatever they're going to be when they become the Honda factory team, to say, hey, I am your factory connection. Put me in your seat.
Sure.
And that team has championship aspirations, whether they're serious about them or not, given the state of one of their seats, is another matter.
You can't do this.
This is not the way. This is not the way to do that. And ultimately, it's one race, and you were put on the wrong strategy. You'll get one back. You have to hope. He'll get one back. You don't need, and it's not the first time we've seen someone swipe like a dickhead after a race at another car. Seb back in Mexico 2016 is probably the most prevalent example I can think of. But it's easily the most unnecessary.
It's just completely uncalled for. And look, honestly, I wouldn't have put it past RB if they sat Tsunoda for the next race and gave Liam Lawson another go. Like, as a one-race suspension for basically putting the... You've put the team into disrepute. That's what you've done by doing this. You've compromised the safety of your car, your teammate and his car, because you got mad at a bad strategy call. Like I said, I understand why Yuki was mad at this, but you can't lash out like that and take it out on your own equipment. It's ludicrous. It's unprofessional. You've had 65 Grand Prix, Yuki. You can't keep... It's completely unjustifiable. There are levels to this. You've got to... All it's doing is proving the haters right about Yuki's lack of temperament and composure. It is that simple. People are going to look at this incident and go, can I trust him with my car? Yes, teams screw up. It happens. Some more than others. And no one's disputing that. But if someone's going to evaluate someone like Yuki Tsunoda as a driver, the difference maker might be lack of professionalism, lack of composure. And there's more than enough evidence to cite that this has been a continued problem for Yuki over his years in F1. And now he's lashed out at his own teammate for no good reason. He's 24 years old and he's had 60 plus Grand Prix. It's year four of his career. I expect that from a flagrant rookie.
I don't expect that is the point. You don't expect it. No. And he's better than this. He has to be better than this if he wants to keep his job.
Absolutely, 100%, completely unnecessary. Hopefully, that's the last we see of Yuki lashing out, because he's got a very talented driver on his level in the paddock, right behind him, ready to go if shit hits the fan. You can't afford to fuck up around here. And that was a fuck up, no question. Now, we got to do a small follow-up on the Christian Horner story, because, again, this is a story that, again, as Cam says, keeps shitting everywhere, and including the middle of my bed, so I have to keep talking about it again. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was a follow-up to the leaks that came out earlier in the week. Of course, Horner put out a statement refuting the connection between the supposed leaked evidence, and he was asked by multiple people, was that you in the leaked evidence? And he denied all association with it.
Yeah.
That's his statement. You can read into that what you will. It's gone a little bit further than that. It turns out that Horner had to have a meeting on Friday with Stefano Domenicali, F1 CEO. Got the wrong Domenicali there. I was Fatty's boss for a second there. My apologies. My apologies to Claudio and Stefano. And Mohammed Ben Sulayem, the president of the FIA. The FIA have said they might still look into this into a case of an ethics probe in a similar incident to what happened to Helmut Marko last year when he made his xenophobic comments about Sergio Perez. there might be a further investigation by the FIA, but we'll have to see in the coming days and weeks as to whether that happens. Red Bull has put out a statement saying, we, as a team, we are unified and we are focused and we're trying to win. Someone within that team had other ideas, though, because Jos Verstappen went on the record to the Dutch media last night, as we're recording this, and said that Horner needs to stand down, otherwise this Red Bull team will tear itself apart. Very conflicting statements. Red Bull's trying to put out the flames while Jos Verstappen is running around with a bottle of kerosene in his hands. It's a wild one, Cam.
Well, doesn't take a lot of imagination to imagine where those leaks came from now, does it?
I'm glad you said it, because this is exactly what I thought after the race on Saturday night. My first thoughts that were running through my head, first of all, was Spider-Man meme, because I will not repeat what was said by a certain biking journo, our friend and yours, David Emmett, regarding this information.
He is the finest journalist working on the scene today. Let's just say that.
Go out of your way to find it. It's a brilliant quote, but it sums it up quite well. But Jos Verstappen talking about other people's toxic relationships is the biggest case of hypocrisy I have ever fucking seen, for what it's worth.
Well, Andre.
But, yeah.
Who else would be... Okay. We know that, ultimately, this is not a case of vigilante justice dropping that leak out there. This is... We're going to get our mans via any means necessary.
Right. I don't think this was a for the greater good leak, because that leak, if this evidence is true, and I still say
right
if,
now,
but
because right now, as of time of recording, 3:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, March 3rd, 2024. It's the Dale Day. Entities like the Associated Press, ESPN, they have not verified the legitimacy of this evidence. Some people, friends of ours, think that it is real. Others think that it is not. We genuinely don't know right now as of time of recording.
Yeah, exactly. And what we would say is that if this is true, that evidence contains names where the alleged victim has been doxxed.
And who else would go out of their way to get their mans via any means necessary, even if it meant that someone got doxxed over it?
Maybe someone who doesn't have respect for women, with a proven track record of being disrespectful towards women, and that's me being very kind in my wording of that last statement.
Yeah, doesn't take a lot of imagination.
Because my second thought on this story was, you've done a very bad job of giving the game away if this was your agenda.
Yeah, all you had to do, if this was your agenda, was just pipe down, let the leak destabilize those who you want destabilized. But you had to open your big fat mouth, didn't you?
Yeah, because let's talk about what we do definitely know. What we do know is that the Telegraph over in the Netherlands broke this story first. This was probably not going to be talked about publicly because it was an internal workplace dispute until the Telegraph published this story. It's also worth pointing out that Erik van Heeren at the Telegraph, who has been the lead writer on this story from day one, also was the first person to claim this was a sexual harassment case and not just a controlling and coercive behavior trial, which is what the British press was going with. So the Dutch press has been the ones that have been pushing this story forward from the moment it broke. They also claimed they'd seen the evidence. Now, I can only speculate here. We don't know this with 100% certainty, but what I will say is, if you put the puzzle pieces together, it looks to us as if the people that were orchestrating this leak and orchestrating what they could give out about this story is seemingly coming out of the Dutch side of Red Bull Racing. Yeah. It has to be.
Out of the Verstappen camp. And in addition,
it's all coming out of that camp.
It's all coming out of that camp. And that plays into the fact, didn't even mention it, that whoever did this had the personal emails of basically every Formula One journalist, media, and staff member they could get their hands on.
Yeah. That's not an easily accessible list. So a lot of those emails are private. You know, it's someone from the call is coming from inside the house, is the impression that I get from all of this. I'm not nailing my flag to the mast and saying it's definitely him, but I certainly think I'm pretty confident in saying it's coming out of that camp.
I am as well. And
what people like Jenna Fryer were saying about the possibility of an internal Red Bull power struggle, that looks like it's holding up.
Well, when a representative for the team is basically doing the all is well in front of the conflagration, and you have and Jos Verstappen is not employed by Red Bull Racing, but we all know what his relationship is in there, is openly calling for the team principal's head.
It's a coup.
They're attempting a coup.
Call it what it is. It's a coup. Call it what it is. And again, we're spitballing here. But if I was going to orchestrate a coup or a coup of some kind against Christian Horner off the back of this story, and let's pretend for argument's sake that his camp has leaked this out, what's the one bullet you've got left in your chamber? Max Verstappen.
We'll take Max somewhere else.
And it wouldn't be the first time that Jos has made that power play. We know how he got that Red Bull seat in the first place.
Yep.
It's the one bullet in the chamber he's got left.
I mean, if they...
That's the new round of speculation, is that maybe, because he was seen pictured talking to Toto Wolff during the Bahrain weekend. And, you know, again, it's only a rumor, but is the one smoking gun you've got left the possibility of trying to force Max out of that team?
It'd be career suicide.
Because there's also one other thing that Andrew Benson reported today at the time of recording, that according to Andrew Benson at BBC F1, he said that Mohamed Ben Sulayem went to Max Verstappen and asked him to publicly endorse Christian Horner over the course of the weekend. Now, the full story went into a bit more context to that, saying that he'd already been asked four times if he felt that Horner was a fair and, quote, responsible team boss. But it is alarming that this is the way that the sports leader of the governing body is going down.
Yeah. I don't even know what to make of it, genuinely.
If that is true from what Benson's reported, then that is... honestly, Mohamed Ben Sulayem is not fit for purpose as FIA president. Because if you've had a meeting with Horner, you know what's going on, and you know what the accusations are against Christian Horner as a team principal. We are talking about sexual harassment here, which is completely unacceptable in any working environment or in general society across the board. And you're telling the sport's reigning world champion to defend him publicly. That's disgraceful on any level. It's an absolute disgrace.
I mean, I'm looking at the article right now, and there's... I mean, there's nothing there actually citing it in this article.
Yeah. We got King pointed out from the full post saying that Ben Salim's approach came after Verstappen gave only qualified support to Horner when asked four times in the lead-up to the Bahrain Grand Prix on Saturday whether he had full faith and confidence in him. And I remember Max talked about this, and he spoke glowingly of Horner as a team boss during this race weekend. Said he was an incredible team boss. Now, I don't know if that was Max just bullshitting or whether Ben Salim had a word in his ear before that statement had happened. But in any case, it's another ugly black mark on this story that did not need to be there, because it comes across, if this is true, because again, Benson tweeted this out alongside the article, it comes off as if you're getting your capes out for a team boss that's allegedly a sex pest. What? What are we doing here?
This all looks great on Formula One, doesn't it?
It's a fucking joke. It's an embarrassment to the sport across the board. Like, again, I cannot stress this as a British guy here, because I'm the one Brit here who obviously can be an American. This is a mainstream story in the UK right now. Like, Christian Horner does have genuine name recognition now because of his success with Red Bull, but also because he's married to Jerry Horner, the former Spice Girl, formerly Jerry Halliwell.
Who was present.
Present. Big show of solidarity, a lot of hand-holding, a lot of public affection and all of that. Big, you know, strength and pillar of the community type vibes. The whole thing is ugly. The whole thing is just ugly.
Feels like, and again, prefacing with, we don't know if what was leaked is genuine, because those with the power to verify that have not come out and said that yet. So,
and I don't think they will.
And we'll have to see,
because a lot of these big name media for F1 types is British, and our libel laws are tighter than anything else.
They bring the hammer down on you hard if you are found guilty of it.
If the big UK guys get this wrong, they will be sued. 110%.
Someone's getting fucking sued in all of this.
Someone. Oh, absolutely.
Because there is just a lot of people trying to get their mans.
Yeah. That's the one definite, that's the one thing that we know with absolute certainty. Someone's got it out for Horner from within the house. At least one person does. And we know Jos is one of them, but there's clearly... We don't know for sure whether it was him.
Somewhere within the two sides of Red Bull that they want this man gone, rightly or wrongly. Again, we are not necessarily privy to that information. But it just keeps getting worse. Every day there's another step to this story that just looks worse and worse.
It's a black, ugly, horrible mark on the sport. And just to, before we get out of here, I just want just to make this point, because I did write about this on the Race Review and our website. As a sport, we have to do better. This is not an F1 specific necessarily problem. This is a societal problem. Big corporation, big business, big powerful, you know, big powerful person within an entity abuses their position and abuses their power. Like, this is something that we, as fans of this sport, as people that have skin in this game, we have to keep encouraging good people to get into F1 to influence positive change, because it's not the first instance within Formula One that we've covered as podcast hosts and as fans of this sport where women have been unsafe in the workplace or unsafe in the stands or unsafe in the paddock. I'm very good friends of Hazel Southall. She's been through that experience more times than I can count. I'm good friends of Elizabeth Blackstock. She's been very public about catcalling, abuse towards women within tracks, within places of work. The list goes on. We have to do better. We have to influence positive change. We have to get people in the paddock that are good people that can potentially be that change that we want to see within this sport. Because unfortunately, no matter which way you slice it, this is a horrible, ugly stain on this sport. And it's the last thing that Formula One needed right now.
Trey, this will define this championship, this year in Formula One, irrespective of outcome.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to remember F1 2024, not for what happened on track, because there ain't a lot happening on track, let's be honest with ourselves. We're going to remember it for the sport being brought into disrepute to open the year. And then it getting worse for the next month.
The call has once again come from inside the house. And I've said it before on this show, and I will say it again. How many times does this have to keep happening before we straight out come out and say Red Bull has a culture problem? I don't know what more evidence you need. I don't know what more needs to be said and done for the majority of F1 fans, not just people that want to get their Twitter likes out. People want to stick their heads above the parapet and say with their full chest, this team has a culture problem. because it does. There's more than enough evidence over the last half decade of how this team has gotten down inside their own backyard that shit is toxic. Jiří Vips, Helmut Marko on numerous occasions, Christian Horner and what he's been alleged to in the past. Like, you know, greater members of Verstappen's family like Nelson Piquet Sr. The call is coming from inside the house here. I cannot stress this enough. How many times is this going to keep happening and the sport as a whole turns a blind eye to it? Enough is enough. Some heads need to roll somewhere as a result of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not...
heads are going to. I guarantee you, through the end of this, someone's getting fired.
I'd be shocked if Jos Verstappen's in the paddock during Saudi Arabia next, this weekend that's coming up. He's just called for his boss's head. How can he sit in the paddock as if nothing's happened?
Because he thinks he's untouchable because he can just take Max somewhere else. Ignoring the fact that, does Max Verstappen want to step away from a clearly dominant car?
One of the best we've ever seen. And honestly, if that's the reason that Horner ends up losing his job over this, it says a lot about the state of the sport, where at the end of the day, it came down to keeping your star driver that lost Christian Horner his gig and not the sexual harassment allegations that have been leveled under his head.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of says it all, and that's a sad indictment of where Formula One is as a sport, if that's what it came down to, rather than what he did or didn't do via text message. And that says it all, quite frankly. Formula One is back in Saudi Arabia this weekend. Remember, it's a Saturday race again, just to get it in before Ramadan in. So Thursday to Saturday will be the race weekend over on that one. It's going to be a busy week next week. We're going to have a triple header of recordings, because not only is Formula One back in Saudi Arabia this week, we're starting our other two major season coverage. We have MotoGP in Qatar to start their season this weekend, and IndyCar starts their season at the streets of St. Petersburg next week as well. So a big, busy, blockbuster weekend of motorsport. The ball really starts rolling. I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cam Buckley. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Sayonara.